Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Homer Fife. Martin, let me ask you something. Do you have a job?
I fortunately do at the moment, but I guess we might be thinking about the 8.2% of the US workforce that is not currently employed.
Now, I think the correlation is fantastic. It's the worst it's been since 1983. Now, in 1983, Ronald Reagan stepped up and fixed our former Democratic leader Carter's mistakes and brought us out of all of this. I'm just curious to see what Obama's going to do. He's making all these promises, but I've yet to see anything.
Yeah, but you have to think that, you know, the last time this happened and Reagan stepped up, it wasn't instantaneous either. So I suppose you have to be fair to President Obama and give him some time and for some of these stimulus packages to take effect. I mean, if there was a magic wand, you'd like to think that our elected leaders would have waived it.
But that's the problem, Martin. It's the stimulus package itself that's going to cause us worse problems. Because, all right, look, I care about health care, okay? And I truly think that everybody should have good, solid health care. But is right now the time to be worrying about that? Is the time to be worrying about socializing health care a time when we have almost 8.5% of Americans are out of work? We've got factories shutting down. We've got major corporations laying people off. And guess what I just heard on the news yesterday, or actually this morning? General Motors is saying the bailout money's not enough. They may still wind up having to go into bankruptcy. What kind of an impact is that going to have as far as these jobs go? It's getting desperate over here, Martin.
But I suppose you could take the argument that you might need more socialized health care in a time when there are a lot of people who can't afford health care. And clearly, if you're unemployed, that means you can't keep the premiums up for your health care. What happens if you get sick? So you can see the correlation there of saying, well, in trying times, we probably need to have some more state intervention, particularly around health care. Because you can say, yeah, you're building things up for the past. But if you say have a whole generation of people who didn't have access to healthcare now, are you not also just storing problems up for the future anyway? And those people will avoid, you know, getting operations, getting drugs, which then may cost somebody a huge amount of money into the future.
I mean, I understand your point of view, but I think what we've got is the cart's pulling the horse here. Let's get people employed. You know, let's get them employed. They make enough money. They can take care of their own healthcare. And, you know, I think one of the big things that kind of sticks in my gullet a little bit, to use a country term, is the liberals keep putting out the fact that poor people can't get health care. Well, they most certainly can. If you walk into a hospital and you have a problem, they are required by law to treat you. It's not like you can't get health care. Okay, you might not be able to go get your sniffly nose taken care of. You might have to take care of that at home with some Alka-Seltzer plus cold medicine or something. But you know, the fact of the matter is, if something serious is wrong with you, you can get it fixed. And they don't, you know, regardless of your ability to pay. So to me, it's the scare tactics once again coming through.
And it is interesting, in the UK, we have a national health service that is free at the point of use, from my point of view. So, you know, I never have to worry about having to pay for anything. You know, if I need to go to A&E, if I need to go and see my GP, I don't have to pay for it. I have the right to top up to have private medical care if I don't want to go to a national health service hospital, or I don't want to do the waiting list. But in the UK, you know, if I need surgery, it may take me six months to get the operation, but I wouldn't necessarily have to pay for it. I can choose to pay for it. So it is slightly different over here. But then we've had a national health service since the sort of end, since the late 1940s. So it's probably something that everybody in the UK is just used to, and it's something we've grown up with.
Martin, I know we don't normally do this, but I do want to break in here. I just got a flash on a news headline. Zimbabwe's prime minister, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but
Morgan Tsvangirai.
Okay, he has been hurt and his wife has been killed in a car accident.
Yes.
On the outskirts of the capital. And I just, you know, all of our best go out to him. They've been married since 1978. They have six children, apparently a wonderful couple. Regardless of what you think of his political stance or his leadership in that very troubled country, something like this, You know, this surpasses all of that.
Oh, absolutely it does. And certainly, yes, our sympathies would go out to Morgan Tsvangirai and his family in these trying times. But, just glancing back to what we were talking about, I suppose one thing that would always interest me about the unemployment rate would be, well, you know, I hear externally and sort of talking to not only yourself but other American friends I have, that there is a huge class or a huge number of illegals in the United States. And just, you know, what would happen if somehow you managed to convince a lot of those illegals to go home? Just how many more jobs would you create for Americans?
Now, that's an interesting take on it, Martin, because I also wonder if they're counting the number of illegals over here that are unemployed in that 8.2%. I mean, it begs the question, does it not? I mean, we have a lot of illegals over here that currently are unemployed because they came over to do construction. Well, of course, the housing futures market right now is zero. Nobody's working on it or building any new homes. So all of these illegals are sitting over here with no job.
But if it begs the question, though, but if they're illegals, why would they be appearing in the national statistics? If you're illegal and you're not supposed to be in a country, sorry, someone should be saying, well, you shouldn't be counted because you don't exist.
And I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying that would be an interesting thing to find out, because I do know that they artificially inflate the unemployment rate by counting students. I don't know if you know this or not, but here in the United States, if you are a college student, you are counted in the unemployment rate.
I'm sure there are many of people who would probably say that's not an unfair assessment of a lot of students and what they do during their time at college or university.
Well, it would be a good assessment of my time at college, but regardless, that's artificially inflating the numbers.
Absolutely, and you have to think, you know, how much money is being pumped into the stimulus package, into bailing out banks, into bailing out the automotive industry. You know, it makes you wonder if they spent as much money enforcing the borders of the United States and maybe hunting down all the illegal immigrants and just, you know, shipping them somewhere. I mean, the problem is probably finding, shipping them somewhere, knowing whether they're, you know, whether they're Mexican, whether they're Costa Rican, whether they're Peruvian, whether they're whatever, and actually shipping them home. Because I suppose that's one of the things people just say, well, you know, I've got no home.
Yeah, but you know what, Martin? We're spoiled over here. We are horribly spoiled because these illegals come over here and, you know, you've heard it said before and I will repeat it. They're doing work that we won't do. They're out in the fields picking plants or picking crops. They're tending gardens. They're doing landscaping. They're doing construction work. They're doing work that we as Americans consider, and I'm going to say it, we consider it to be above us. So, you know, your point is valid. I'm sure there are tons and tons of jobs available, but will the Americans come up or step up and do the jobs, or will they sit around on their butts and cry that they don't have a job?
And that's a very good point, and I suppose that starts to test the mettle of people as to whether they're prepared to do a job or any job, which I think is a clear thing. You know, certainly in the UK, if you're unemployed, you know, you have to be actively seeking work. Now, you know, you can turn around and say, well, I can't do this job because I'm not skilled to do it. You know, if it's a, you know, a medical job or something, I could turn around and say, well, I'm not skilled to do it. But, you know, construction, you know, putting buildings up, you know, digging ditches, I don't know, tending gardens. I've got to say, most people should be qualified to do that.
I agree, and I have said it before and I'll say it again. When I can open up the local paper and there are help wanted ads in there for McDonald's, somebody to flip burgers, somebody to sweep floors at the local convenience store, or somebody to saw a piece of a board so a carpenter can fit it into a house, then the unemployment rate should not be what it is. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to do what it takes to feed and clothe my family, and that's the problem with us Americans. You know, you got laid off at your job and your job was, I don't know, let's just say it was cleaning chemistry bottles. Well, just because you can't find a job cleaning chemistry bottles doesn't mean you shouldn't go back to work.
Spot on there. Absolutely. And if you want to comment on what we've said, you know what to do. You need to come and find the show thread and post away. But what we do have coming up next in the show are some pieces from Justin Oldham, Don White, and Expert 11, and we asked them for their views of the new president. So let's have a listen.
We're just a little bit more than 25 days into the administration of America's 44th president. Barack Obama has been very busy over the last few weeks. Everybody on his team seems to be moving lickety-split fast to unpack and get started in their new jobs, and the only thing that seems to be moving faster than they are is the downgrading economy. I haven't seen numbers move this fast since my last IRS audit, which, by the way, I passed with flying colors. As we look back on these last 3 weeks, it's becoming abundantly clear that Barack Obama is just not his own man. As a presidential executive, I'd have to classify him so far as being weak. This man has had his political agenda, his cabinet appointments, and his media image hijacked by his own party. Now, this would be oh so funny if it weren't so oh so true. Now, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to put the pieces of this puzzle together. Here's how it breaks out. First and foremost, there is the stimulus package, the alleged American Economic Recovery Act that the president asked for. Now, let's be clear on one thing here. The president asked for an economic stimulus package. What the Congress has given him is a policy-driven spending package. Now, if he really were in a position to make up his own mind and make up his own decisions, he'd be saying, wrong answer, go back and do this again because it's not what I asked for. Instead, every time you see him in front of a TV camera, he is laudatory without being complimentary. He's positive without being picky. And he's clearly making every attempt to avoid ruffling any feathers. And hey, let's call this for what it is. When the President of the United States does not have the will to face down the Speaker of the House or the Majority Leader in the Senate, when these folks are flying his, when they're flying his flag, it tells you that they're not on his side. Now, I know what you're thinking. One piece of legislation. Now, I know what you're thinking. One freshly passed law does not a legislative record make. And you're quite right, but let's look at the other two critical indicators. The president's media image has been blown out of any and all proportions that would be even remotely credible in past decades. Not even the sainted Ronald Reagan had this kind of media support. Now, either one of two things are in force here. Either Press Secretary Gibbs does not have the spine to stand up and defend his president when words are being put into his mouth, or possibly the president is just enjoying the ego strokes. Now, you can't really blame the man for enjoying the perks of his office if he really is just along for the ride. But let's have a look at one more little thing here. Yes, there are a few Republicans in President Obama's cabinet, but if you look at all the others, what do you see? You see Democratic Party loyalists, longtime champions that go back to the days of Bill Clinton. And these are the people who make up the backbone of that cabinet. None of them is beholden to Barack Obama in any way. Interestingly enough, most of President Obama's cabinet, actually, they owe their loyalty to Bill and Hillary Clinton. And there are some conspiracy buffs out there who have suggested that even though she's just the Secretary of State, that Hillary is in fact playing puppet master here. Now, I don't really think that's the case because, hey, she and her husband own the Democratic Party, and they've got the rest of those people to do the dirty work for them. I can prove the soundness of my logic by making two simple predictions. Over the next couple of weeks, the Obama administration will be unveiling their initiatives for dealing with the credit crisis and the housing crisis. I submit to you now that both of these new bills, when they hit the floor of the House and the Senate, they're going to go splat, because they'll be just as weak and watered down and useless as the stimulus package has been. Now, if that turns out to be the case, then Mr. Obama is going to be 3 for 3, and he will have shown us all, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that he's really not in charge of his own administration. Now, the average liberal isn't going to care because, after all, things are going their way. But the average conservative on Capitol Hill had better get real smart real fast. Because if they don't, the only thing harder to find in 2012 than fiscal responsibility will be a Republican.
Hello. Hello, this is Don White on ATS.com. Happy to be here today. I'm looking right now at first 27 days of the Obama administration. I want to recall that Obama, President-elect Obama, followed the same train route to Washington, D.C. from Springfield, Illinois that Abraham Lincoln took. On Inauguration Day, he walked down Pennsylvania for a short distance, a photo op, I guess you'd say, as several of our past presidents have done. During the inauguration itself, there was a little bit of a slip-up when Chief Justice Roberts got his words backwards, but the two of them managed to get through it okay. As an aside, it's a tradition for most of our presidents to take a swearing-in at 1 minute after midnight on January the 20th, just in case something goes wrong. After the swearing-in, there were 11 gala events or balls or celebrations on behalf of President Obama and his wife, Michelle. The next day, he went to work and continued to make appointments in his cabinet. The Illinois fiasco dominated the news because, as you may remember, Governor Blagojevich had offered to sell the office to the highest bidder. Well, we thought we were past that when the governor appointed a very reliable person, Roland Burris, to fill the vacancy. However, just yesterday, we learned that Senator Burris had not been fully forthcoming when he was interviewed by the Illinois House, part of the impeachment proceedings. However, Senator Burris explained that he had indeed been contacted by the brother of Governor Blagojevich, but that he had not had any discussions with him, and so he felt that he answered the questions truthfully. President Obama has run into several other pieces of trouble. His Secretary of Commerce designate, Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, withdrew, citing accusations made about him as governor in a large contract that he gave in which a relative was involved. Secretary of Treasury designate Tim Geithner turned out to have problems. He had failed to pay $34,000 in taxes. President Obama had to not only overlook that oversight, but he had to issue a waiver of his no lobbyist pledge in order to get Tim Geithner in the cabinet. Another lower-level appointee had lost had a $900 tax bill that hadn't been paid. And finally, a very important case, former Senator Tom Daschle, who was to be the health reform person, had failed to pay taxes in the amount of $104,000. And so he had to withdraw. It seems like we have problems over here with nannies that are undocumented workers and taxes that our people can't always pay. The last 2 weeks, however, have been dominated by the attempt by the struggle between the Senate Republicans and President Obama on the passage of his stimulus bill. In America, the Senate, which has 100 members, two from each state, has an arcane rule that requires 60 members to shut off debate, which in essence means that 41 members of the Senate can talk a bill to death. And so the Republicans have that 41 members, and therefore Obama had to make a compromise with two senators from Maine, Senator Olympia Snowe and Senator Susan Collins, and another Republican, Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. Those three Republicans jumped ship, so to speak, and joined with the Democrats after they had extracted several promises and compromises from the stimulus bill by President Obama. Of course, in the House, the Democrats hold a substantial majority. They have 246 votes. Only 218 are required to pass a bill. Now, today, President Obama flew to Denver, Colorado, to sign the new stimulus package into law. From there, he flies on to Phoenix and then tonight to Ottawa, Canada, where he'll visit with the Prime Minister there. So all in all, I would say this has been a good first 4 weeks for President Obama, and I think his poll ratings still stay high. He's over 70%, although he lost ground with the stimulus bill, which fell 55% before it was voted on. The truth is, of course, in regard to stimulus, that no one really knows what to do, but it's politically inexpedient to do nothing. So we're acting even if we if it does turn out to be more harmful than beneficial. Meanwhile, of course, Pakistan has gone to Sharia law in a large part of the country on a deal made with the Taliban. Kabul was bombed 2 days ago when our Ambassador Holbrooke was set to arrive. The man, Mr. Lieberman, in Israel, got 15 seats out of the Knesset's 120, and Benjamin Netanyahu, a hardliner, seems to have the majority, closest to the majority of anyone. Ms. Livni doesn't seem to be able to make it. In Israel, President Shimon has 21 days to designate someone to form a government, or we'll have to have a new round of elections. Iraq is doing as well as we can expect. Iran is sending mixed messages. Saudi Arabia appointed a woman to its Supreme Council, and the terrible conditions in Africa continue as ever. Our biggest problem right now is Mexico, which is having more than difficulty than it should in trying to keep the drug cartels under control. So this many days in, President Obama has a lot of work to do. He's got some things accomplished, and I guarantee you he's learned how to do business in Washington, D.C. Thank you, and good day to you.
Welcome to my appraisal of Obama. I am Luke, aka HBS Member Expert 11. I'm going to deal with the mantle of change and hope that Obama was elected upon as a starting point. Now, I don't doubt that Obama isn't short of political smarts, and the same goes for his advisors. After all, he did beat out Hillary for the nomination, or rather his party's nomination. Obama never explained how he was going to bring about the much-wanted change. So far, the signs aren't looking good, and are pointing to the whole change mantra being a hoax, just like it was here in New Zealand. Yes, it is ashamedly true that a good percentage of Kiwis took more of an interest in the US presidential election than their own last year. While I wasn't one of these people, it is equally true that the sense of history when Obama was giving his victory speech was overwhelming. In the moment, it's said to have helped temper the last debate between Clark and Key. I also thought that Bush's exit from the White House was very dignified. Moving on, I will deal with my chief concerns of the Obama administration. Since the U.S. economy is still still so vital to the global economy, I am naturally concerned with the twofold unsound policies, which are the bailout and the so-called stimulus package. To start off with the bailouts, no company is too big to fail, whether it is Fisher and Paykel in New Zealand or General Motors in the state. It should be noted that a bailout of Fisher and Paykel is only being mooted at this point. All the bailouts can achieve is to create zombie companies that can only survive off further government handout. This, along with building infrastructure that had no real purpose, all helped to create the stagnant economy that Japan suffered from for a decade. The so-called stimulus only pays a token contributions to kickstarting the US economy, with the rest of it being geared towards general policy direction. It really is pitiful that trillion is the new billion, and too few people in Congress care about this fact. Time doesn't permit me to go into why Obama's plans to invest in the mythical green economy will fail. Besides, I want to deal with the stuff Obama has right. Returning the focus from Iraq to the real war in Afghanistan is undoubtedly the right thing to do, and I must give Obama credit where credit is due. Sure, in an ideal world, the drawdown of US forces from Iraq would take place over a longer period of time. But we don't live in an ideal world, and there is a desperate need to bring the fight to the enemy in Afghanistan and give assistance to the Afghan government and its efforts to improve its institutions. Sure, a complete withdrawal from Iraq would be irresponsible. A small training and reaction force should remain, even if it only does prevent the myth that the war was won from forming. Although, I need to point out that I'm not suggesting in any way that the war in Iraq is lost at this moment, but I don't have time to go into details on that matter. It is in no one's best interest that Afghanistan becomes a failed state that is once again a terrorist haven. That's it from me. If anybody has any queries, they know where to find me.
Hi, I'm Frank Edwards 35. I'm going to tell you my views on the current Obama administration. So far, I'm a bit mixed on his views. I like most of what he's done. So, I'm just a bit disappointed with what he's been doing with the foreign policy, but I should have known that liberals and conservatives are both one and the same when it comes to foreign policy. I mean, they both favor intervention, and that's really not what I like. I should have known that about both parties, but aside from that, I'm not being dismissive yet. He seems like he's a very smart person. He has a lot of charisma. People have suggested that he's like Hitler, but I don't agree. He really hasn't shown that he can get away with murder or things like that. He doesn't have that much charisma. So I think this is essentially just proves the notion that Obama is like Hitler. Some things I like about him, I like what he's done with the rights. He's increased women's rights. He signed that equal pay bill a while ago. I just, my opinion, some of the things he's done is not really my cup of tea, I guess. I used to be economically liberal, and I'm more fiscally conservative. I'm a libertarian, so I just disagree with some of the things he's been doing with the economy. It's just, like, when, like, people say, oh, yay, we're getting money, they're getting money to save them. I'm like, oh, no, inflation's going to come. So I guess maybe people will wake up to economic reality sometime soon. But my hope is that Barack Obama succeeds and that, I know, I don't like how he's been following through with conditioning economics. That I disapprove of. But most of the part, things he's done, I mean, I think he's been doing a good job of so far. As regards to foreign policy, I like soft power that the administration has been showing. Hillary Clinton seems to be really strong talking to Asia. Not an exactly good thing when she's talking to them about getting debt. I mean, about asking them to buy more debt. I mean, yeah, that doesn't sound good to me. That doesn't ring a bell. That, like, I know. You know what I'm saying. But, so essentially, I approve of most of his actions so far. I have yet to see, he hasn't turned me against him completely. That's what Congress will do. Congress will turn me against them. But so far, Obama seems to be holding to his message of change, except for the time that he really did seem to talk the economy down. I think that contributed to some of the losses we've seen. We might be seeing 6,000, 5,000 numbers. I'm worried about the economy. I hope that it rebounds when the tax cuts start coming in. But anyways, you know, so so that's basically how I see it. Some of the things I disagree and I feel repelled by, like I find repulsive, like nationalizing of the banks. Other things I think are noble that he's been doing, but I know. So those are my views on the presidency of Barack Obama so far. I've omitted some other issues in the issue of time here, but that's my view for the most part.
And just want to say thank you very much to Justin, Don, and Expert 11. We certainly appreciate your views there. And yet again, if you disagree with what any of them have said, you know what to do. Come and find the show thread and post away.
Now, I understand that we're going to include a piece. Now, everybody, myself and Martin got engaged in a conversation that is of a fairly controversial nature. It's about abortion. So we're going to include that conversation. It was off air, so to speak, but we think that some things were said and some things were brought up that need to be aired out, so we're going to include that. Well, I'll tell you, if we do have a minute more, I would like to talk just for a minute about something that's very controversial, but yet very close to heart. Obama has set out now to officially reverse Bush's abortion regulation. Now, I don't care how you feel about abortion. That's individuals, and we could talk about that all day, Mark. The problem that I have is when a doctor or a nurse, because of the way they feel, because of their personal conviction, does not want to do an abortion, does not want to engage in, does not want to participate in an abortion, they should not be forced to. However, without this abortion regulation, if a doctor or nurse refuses to do an abortion because of their religion, because of their ethics, because of whatever reason, out the abortion regulation, they can be fired, essentially forcing them to do this abortion. And I'm telling you, it's once again, it's the government stepping into our lives and making us do things that we don't want to do.
This is a really hot potato on this one, so I am going to answer it, but I'm sure we might get some feedback from the listeners. I sort of take the view here that you have to take the rough with the smooth here. If you've signed up to be in the medical practice and somebody comes to you and says, I want an abortion, I think you have to go into the medical professions with the full knowledge that one day you're going to do this. And I suppose another example, just to paint this, it would be like joining the military, and then when someone says, oh, by the way, you've got to go to Afghanistan or Iraq, you say, no, I don't want to kill anybody. You know, you knew when you became a doctor, you knew when you became a nurse that at some stage you may have to do this. So if you don't want to do that, I don't think you should take the job up.
No, but you're mixing apples and oranges, Martin, because when you're talking about an abortion, I'm not talking about one to save a mother's life. That's a whole different story. I'm talking about an elected abortion, okay, and where the mother's life is not in danger, nor is the life of the child, okay, and that's what this regulation concerns, okay. So what you're talking about here, let's just take this one step further. Are we going to start firing doctors and nurses that won't do liposuction? What if a fat guy walks into where my wife works and says, I want this fat suction from out around my waist, and my wife says, I'm sorry, we don't do that. Is she going to be fired for that?
But the difference...
It's elective surgery.
But the difference is most states have not legislated about when and if you can have liposuction, but a lot of states have legislated about the right to have an abortion. No state has spent the time and money to put a statute on its books to say, by the way, anybody can walk into any medical facility and demand liposuction. So I think, I don't think you can say it's oranges and apples, because no one has legislated against the right to have cosmetic surgery.
Yeah, okay, Martin, states... Well, let's talk right. Okay, it's the rights of the person who wants the elective abortion. Does that trump the rights of the doctor or nurse who doesn't want to do the procedure? Why are those rights not as protected as the rights of the person that wants to do the abortion? Why are they not why are they not made to go to a doctor or a nurse or a medical facility that advocates abortion? I'm sure there's plenty of them out there. So why force these people that don't want to do them? Because you're forcing them. I mean, anybody says you're not, it's an idiot. Because if they don't do it, they get fired. So they have to do it. And in today's economy, you can't afford to get fired.
I absolutely agree on the sort of you have to do it. But I think, you know, I think you have to step back a little bit and say, when I came to be a doctor and a nurse, I have to accept that I may have to do things that morally I find wrong that my state has legislated for. And I think that's the real key, is that how can you turn around and say, my state has legislated for something, but I don't agree with it? Can you turn around and say, I don't agree with the 55 mile an hour speed limit, I'm not going to abide by it? You either have to abide by the laws of your state or you don't. I can't see how you can have a sort of I like this law, I'm gonna accept it. Or you have to say all or nothing. You can't turn around and say, I'm not gonna exercise this because I don't like it.
But again, Martin, and I think a little bit of our confusion here is coming from the fact that we do not have government sponsored health care. My wife works for a privately run hospital that is in a business of making money, okay? This hospital is not in any way, shape, or form supported by or sanctioned by the federal government, except when they treat people. Of course, they're required by law to treat people in emergency circumstances that have money or not. So, you know, we're not talking about, my wife is not a government official. So whether the state has legislated or not, and now you're talking about the law of speeding. Again, you're mixing apples and oranges. The law of speeding is put there in order to safeguard someone's life. I'm talking about an elected abortion from a mother who could legitimately have the child without any danger to her life or the child's life. There's no danger of life involved here at all. She just says, all of a sudden, look, I don't want it. I want to have this baby killed. So
which you can turn around and say the fact that someone, you know, that is probably going to be fairly emotive, because some people will turn around and say definitions of, you know, babies and all those type of things, you know, whether, you know, what is the definition of life and all these type of things. And I think people, you know, I think this subject gets so emotive because the moment people start using certain words in this discussion, it just inflames them. So I think this is a, you know, I'm not sure how you can ever actually have a full and frank discussion about abortions, because people, as soon as you start mentioning the words, you know, potentially killing something, people's emotions take over a lot more than their logical brains, and they just think it's wrong to kill anything.
Well, you know, in a lot of ways it is, and I understand what you're saying, and I absolutely do. And look, I'm not anti-abortion, and I'll tell you why. The reason I'm not anti-abortion is because if we outlaw abortion, then it's going to go back to the way it was, where abortions are going to be done in side alleys by people with coat hangers. So there has to be some allowance for people that are going to have abortions anyway, so why not have it regulated so that it's done correctly by a qualified surgeon assisted by qualified nurses? Problem that I have is forcing people who don't want to do it. If a doctor or a nurse doesn't want to do it, there's no way you can tell me that that person can't go somewhere else and have it done by somebody that does. There's plenty of doctors and nurses out there that will do abortion.
Absolutely. And I think, I actually think what you and I ought to do is we probably ought to do a complete show on this one, because it's such an emotive subject here that I suspect in sort of 10 minutes you and I can hardly do it the justice it actually deserves.
I would love to do a show on the legalities of abortion.
Well, I suspect we probably want to maybe try and involve some of our members in that one, so that might be something that we might try and set up there. wow, what an interesting show, an eclectic show, you might say, Homer, we've had. We've spoken about unemployment. We've touched very briefly on the tragedy for the Morgan Tsvangirai in Zimbabwe. We've heard some pieces on the new president, and then we've touched on probably real hot potato abortion.
I agree. You know, hot potato, but absolutely one of my favorite shows already, and I haven't even listened to it after we recorded it.
Yes. And I can suspect that that one might run and run, and we may even come back to it at a later date and maybe get some members or some guests on to sort of debate that with us, because I think it is a fairly hot subject, and one that I'm sure once we start doing that, we'll get a lot of interest from the members.
We have to constantly stay in line, Martin, with the fact that we are going to put the topics out there that some of the other media may not present. We want our listeners to hear everything about everything political.
Absolutely, and that sometimes means that we will bring you things that may be controversial, you may not want to hear, and hey, you always have the choice. If you don't want to hear what someone's got to say, you have the ultimate choice. You can just choose to switch off, or you can just choose to fast forward those bits, but we'll always try and bring you people that you may not hear elsewhere.
And I'll present this to the listeners, Martin. If it's something that offends you, let us know. Get on the thread and post it, and I promise you one of us will respond to it.
Yep, we certainly will. And with that, I want to say thank you very much for listening to the Above Politics show. I have been Martin Bain.
And I'm still Homer Fife.
And we'll see you next time on the Above Politics show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.